dream of dancing in the city with a husband by my side. But that was all so long ago. Now my dreams have died. Oh, my dreams have died.
Pobre Rufina, in a river of self-pity. Mira, mujer, mira, open your eyes. Outside your window,
my family, no one else will lend a hand. Why fight? The world will never change. So alone I stand. Oh, alone I stand.
Mira, Rufina, turn and see the horizon. Your children's sun is rising.
Listening to Bathrob Spear's Broadsides. Back again from the grave with Bathrob Spear Robert Norris, your host, that's me, on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This show is being recorded on February 21st, 1997, a Friday evening, and you're listening to the San Francisco Mime Troupe, and a production of earlier in the 90s, which I unfortunately don't have the name of. But the theme of this song, as you can hear, is one that we all can feel rather deeply, which is, here we are seemingly alone, struggling on and not seeming to get anywhere. I've been fighting against the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban for, what, 8-9 years now? At least in a vigorous way, and for actually a couple of decades before that. And we don't seem to have gotten too much further. We've gotten a church exception, which was passed in 1995, which allows, what, Santa Cruz's 500 to 1,500 homeless people in the city the right to sleep in 3 vehicles on a piece of church property with the permission of the church. I think only a handful of the local churches have allowed this. Father Marini's Holy Cross Church tried to open up a pavilion last summer and again this fall, and were thwarted by a combination of complaints from neighbors and hard-assed response from then-Mayor Mike Rotkin. So, what do we do? How do we proceed? Where do we go next? I don't really have the answers. I just keep posing the questions and raising the issues, and that's what we're going to be doing here on Bathrob Spear's Broadsides tonight. It is tonight as I'm recording this tape, and I hope you're enjoying it. Let's hear a little more of the Mime Troupe, and then we'll get on to some of the issues.
Sweat from years of slavery. Today we'll plant a field of bombs and set this pueblo free. Vamos ya a hacer la bomba popular. Si hay que defender la tierra, voy a construir una bella bomba. Voy esta arma de liberación. Yo lo hago de mi corazón.
Acérquense con
carabineros, set up close and lend a hand. Put 50 grams of gunpowder very carefully in a can.
Back in rocks for shrapnel, the fuse rope will serve us well. If the warrior comes to take our land, we'll send them all to hell.
Vamos ya a hacer la bomba popular. Se quiere prender la tierra hoy. Subir una bella bomba hoy. Esa alma de liberación. Yo lo hago de mi corazón.
Again, to the San Francisco Mime Troupe. We were actually up at the Mime Troupe. Activists from my group, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a homeless rights group here in Santa Cruz, trying to bring to the Mime Troupe audience, which we saw was composed of numerous progressives from around Santa Cruz, including City Council Member Celia Scott. So about a month ago, I and half a dozen other folks, most of them homeless, went up to UCSC campus where the Mime Troupe was playing and gave out a rather long flyer called Seis Mil Quinientos Noches, 6,500 Nights. The actual production that the Mime Troupe was playing up there was called 13 Days, about the struggle for freedom in Mexico, southern Mexico, that's happening now. The Zapatistas, and we distributed a flyer up there, 6,500 nights, and began for 6,500 nights. Houseless people have slept in fear of harassment, citation, arrest, and jail under the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban. Mayor Cynthia Matthews and Councilmember Mike Rotkin recently vetoed any council debate. The two supported a campaign to make one instance of sleeping at City Hall punishable by up to 6 months in jail and $1,000 fine. Their council voted $500,000 to upgrade the Pogonip clubhouse for the rich soccer moms, but will not open a safe haven campground for the poor at a fraction of that cost. And it was quite an interesting flyer. It included a long one called Busting the Homeless is Bad Business, Try Real Solutions to the Shelter Crisis, and then a long fact sheet, Facts and Figures, February 1st, 1997, the homeless debacle in Santa Cruz. And you can get a copy of this if you're interested by getting in touch with me at HUF headquarters. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom at 423-HUF. Give me a call, and I'll try to get you a copy of this flyer if you're still interested, or you can look for the table on the mall that is currently trying to get the Safe Haven or Campground project open. Anyway, the Pacific Garden Mall, and you can often find these folks flyering either in front of the Downtown Informant Center, that's actually the Downtown Information Center, as they call it, the so-called happy hosts, the green-garbed goblins that walk about with happy smiles, helping out tourists and jailing poor people for sitting on the sidewalk, or possibly for selling small quantities of marijuana. Anyway, we asked the Mime Troupe administration if it would be okay for either us or them to make a statement from the stage about the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban. And we were told they would try to do so. But imagine my surprise when I received a message from my answering machine from a man who identified himself as Mark Sienka, UCSC Director of Arts and Lecture, who essentially said, you can't do anything or say anything from the stage, and more important, we won't even let the Mime Troupe mention the sleeping ban. We've hired them as a performance package. We control what they say, what they do. And my immediate reaction to this, and as well as that reaction of several other people, was,
this is a form of censorship. That we were surprised that they would even try this on the mime troupe, since we'd heard that the mime troupe had a kind of a reputation for setting its own agenda, for making its own decisions about local groups and so forth. And we went down and talked to the director, and the director said, no, we're not going to be censored, but we don't have time really to do much of a statement. We'll try and work in something if we can. And we turned our 45-second statement into three simple sentences very quickly and gave it to the director. And we heard that night that he had made a sort of an oblique joke about how the mime troupe might be arrested if they came into Santa Cruz with blankets on. And according to our sources, we couldn't get in because it cost, like, it was $15 a ticket, and we didn't have the money to do that, and we didn't give out any free tickets. People laughed, but the general sense we had was that the issue was not really put forward to people, and that we feared that the mime troupe had been censored. So we put out a flyer the next night which said, "From Mime Troupe to Mum Troupe was a message from Santa Cruz homeless censored by the UCSC Arts and Lecture Department." And the message that we wanted to make from the stage, or have them make, or have brought up in some way, was, "Any Chiapan resting and wearing his poncho or sabana," that's a blanket, "after 11 p.m. on the streets of Santa Cruz would be issued a $162 ticket and have her blanket seized as evidence of a crime. Fight the sleeping ban and the blanket ban here in compassionate and liberal Santa Cruz. Call Mike Rodkin and Mayor Matthews at 429-3550 and tell them a law against sleep is an unjust law." Mime Troupe never made that statement, and in truth, they never promised to make it. But they never made any statement, really, that was clear about this issue, and we thought they'd been censored, particularly since we got specific and direct word from Mark Cianca of UCSC Arts and Lecture Department that they were not going to be allowed to make any such statement on the stage. So we put out this flyer, "From Mime Troupe to Mum Troupe," and that incurred the rage of the director, who felt that we were abusing the mime troupe and accusing them of colluding in some sort of censorship effort. And in the end, it all seemed to be some sort of misunderstanding, because the mime troupe apparently has much broader freedom to discuss issues when it's sponsoring its own shows up in San Francisco and the Bay Area in the parks, where those shows are free, than it does when it's on the road, sponsored by organizations like UCSC Arts and Lecture, where they have to be very careful, and or they have, maybe it's a matter of professional courtesy, any kinds of political statements, or even the tables outside. The Resource Center for Nonviolence, I think, was also tabling, or maybe it was the Committee for Democracy in Mexico, supporting the Zapatistas. And they seek to get the permission of the group that's sponsoring them, and that's a form, I suppose, of courtesy. But again, our expectation was that the mime troupe would have much more freedom than it did, and we were wrong. They didn't have that expectation, and we're, in a way, I regretted the fact that this misunderstanding happened, because now the mime troupe feels that we've misused them and so forth, and it's a pity. But I think it's a kind of a brouhaha about nothing, and sort of a tempest in a teapot. I think the mime troupe should be pleased that we were able to get some publicity out about an issue which I think, indeed, they are concerned about. If they care about the rights of poor people in Santa Cruz and California in the United States, as I'm sure they do. So that's sort of a little episode that happened last month as we sort of plodded onward in our quixotic campaign to end the sleeping ban and alert the broader citizenry to the realities of what it means to be poor in Santa Cruz and sleep outside and run into the professedly liberal but actually quite reactionary Santa Cruz City Council.
Compañeros, are you confused by what you see? There's violence on the left and right, still in the center, some look for peace. Their dream is one of beauty, the lion sleeps with the lamb. But those who sleep between them better sleep lightly if they can.
no hay centro, amigo. No hay centro.
There's no center, only left and right, which means you have to choose, of course. And we've got some choices coming up. Santa Cruz City Council on March 4th has a homeless study session, a special, you might even say, day-long fest starting at 3 or 4, it's not too clear which yet, on a week from Tuesday. March 4th is a Tuesday, and this council session is going to be essentially an opportunity for council members to discuss issues of homelessness among themselves with a kind of a couple of expert panels that they can ask questions of, and other folks making some presentations, and then a short period, I think two brief periods, of public comment, which you can't say it's a bad thing. I mean, after all, homelessness usually gets, what, half an hour at most of oral communications at City Hall, but you have to consider where this all came from. You have, of course, a crisis situation every night. You have a situation where people have to sleep outside. They have no legal place to sleep. The campground, which used to be open in 1994 and 95, has been closed, and we have a locked-off field out there at Coral Street. And we have people being, if not ticketed and arrested in a mass regular manner, at least in fear of that, having to hide, having to seek a form of isolation that is unsafe, and indeed in many cases getting tickets anyway and going to court, as you'll find if you go to the court dockets over at the county building. Just check out Department 10, that's Meat Grinder Mulligan's court, the traffic referee where most of the camping tickets end up. Look for 6.36 citations, and there are plenty of them. They show up there, particularly with warrants, because most folks who get these tickets can't afford to go in to pay for them, can't afford, and they don't have the opportunity to make a place in their schedule to go to these courts to engage in these little games. They're too busy finding a place to sleep, finding enough to eat, maybe even trying to get a job, and so they have to get enmeshed in these wires. They ended up missing their court dates and going into warrant and going to jail, and then the whole process is, of course, one that I've described and that perhaps many of our listeners are familiar with already. So, what happened is that the City Council has essentially been ignoring this issue, and they get more and more adamant and angry as people get angrier and angrier that they've ignored the issue. And then there was a lengthy protest, 7.5 months long, last year in front of City Hall called the City Hall Sleepers Protest, a peaceful protest that really got the shaft from City Council and their police department. Blankets were stolen by the dozens, and finally some of them were returned many, many months later, but generally speaking, the trials are still going on. In fact, most of them haven't even happened yet, but will begin at the end of this month, the first misdemeanor trials for sleep crime in Santa Cruz history. Sleeping tickets are usually minor infractions, but the city was so intent on closing down this protest that they they had the police arrest on misdemeanor charges, which has never really been done as far as any cases taken to trial. So it'll be interesting to watch these cases. The case of Peppertongue Pat Ring and Mooncat will begin February 28th on Friday, probably about 10 o'clock. Departments 1 or 2, I believe, maybe 3. That'll be interesting. There'll be some jury trials around the issue, and we'll see if those trials can be won. And we'll be talking more about trials later on in this tape. We recently had a trial. The first actual jury trial of the City Hall Sleepers protest happened and was a complete victory for protester Peppertongue Pat Ring, and we'll be talking about that. But right now I'm discussing the March 4th upcoming City Council study session. That's a session that is actually going to have a couple of homeless rights speakers. I think they're going to have somebody from Huff. Not sure if it's going to be me or somebody else, possibly somebody from Food Not Bombs. They're going to have a keynote speaker, Maria Foscanarini, from the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty, and possibly, I think, Judy Appel, the attorney from the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness, which puts out the newspaper Street Sheet, not to be confused with Santa Cruz's very own Street Shit Sheet, the newsletter that I occasionally put out, haven't put one out since last December when I was on the road and put one out in Eugene, Oregon, but hopefully I'll have another one out soon. We'll see about that. Anyway, this March 4th study session is coming up, and what should we do for it? How should we prepare for it? What does it mean? Well, my initial reaction is a somewhat cynical one, because the study session is really Michael Rodkin and Cynthia Matthews' response to their attempt to kind of, it seems to be their attempt to throw a bone to Celia Scott, Catherine Byers, and Scott Kennedy, the three members of the City Council who tried to bring up a concrete proposal in December to change the sleeping ban. They called their proposal the Winter Shelter Emergency Amendments, and there are actually three different proposals which set up a mechanism for creating a winter shelter emergency. Now, we got to say that it wasn't that good a proposal. It simply set in place a mechanism that would have allowed the City Council at some future date to declare a winter shelter emergency if they found a number of factors were happening, including things like there not being enough shelter spaces, the weather being miserable, and so forth, the armory being closed, perhaps, as it's due to close on March 15th, and as it's due not to reopen unless our dear Governor Wilson, Whiplash Wilson as I call him, changes his tune and or the legislature overrides him, if that's possible, I don't know. Anyway, so these three council members in December put forward a winter shelter emergency proposal that was actually cut down within 5 or 10 minutes of its being presented in a rather extraordinary display of gagging by council member Michael Rodkin, who had formerly been mayor, but in fact he may still be mayor secretly. He certainly seems to have the power of the mayor behind him, and certainly had the power of our new mayor, Cynthia Matthews, who I've called on occasion Queen of Mean for her actions around this issue and her more recent statements about setting up Klieg lights downtown to deal with undesirables on Pacific Avenue and so forth, going after essentially poor people for trying to be in public spaces without credit cards. Anyway, the proposals by Celia Scott, Catherine Byers, and Scott Kennedy were quickly buried, very quickly, enraging them. And as you know, if you read the papers, they became very angry about this, suggested there might be a violation of the Brown Act, actually left the council chambers, came back and spoke at the mic from the public side of the forum, and a very rare gesture. And then in the January session, when they came back to City Council, Celia Scott proposed a kind of parliamentary rule that would not allow Mike Rodkin to do the same thing again. It's interesting, however, that Celia Scott did not bring back to City Council a real proposal to deal with the homeless crisis over the winter, the lack of shelter, so that perhaps an emergency campground could open, or perhaps there could be a suspension of the sleeping ban, sections of the camping ban in certain areas of the city, or perhaps there could be sort of no camping zones in the city set up as there were in the county. That's currently the law in the county. Or or any other of a number of other proposals that would have dealt to some extent, perhaps an amnesty for those who have sleeping tickets, perhaps a moratorium on sleeping tickets until there's an adequate number of shelter spaces in some way. None of these did Celia Scott or her liberal friend Catherine Byers or Scott Kennedy bring forward. Instead, the two women, Celia Scott and Catherine Byers, brought forward a proposal to essentially stop Rotkin's tabling maneuver. And a kind of an arcane procedural dispute followed. And the result was a quick victory for Michael Rotkin and Cynthia Matthews, and Kennedy defected to their side. He essentially didn't support Celia Scott and Catherine Byers in trying to essentially set up a process which said before you can table a motion at City Council, you have to allow some public input. So it was Rotkin's way of reasserting his control and his power. Even though he's not mayor, he seems to have as much power as any mayor ever had. And out of all this, Rotkin, through the three council members whose faces he had essentially ground into the dirt, a bone. And that bone was, and Kennedy kind of brought forward this bone, a city council study session on homelessness. And the reason that I call it a bone is not because I don't think the city council shouldn't talk about homelessness, and not that I don't think it isn't profitable, conceivably, for the city council to sit down and devote 5 or 6 or 7 hours to it. I think that's a great idea. But the fact is that an action agenda proposal, a concrete proposal, however limited and vague and inadequate, that would entail a real debate on the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban for the first time in Santa Cruz history since the 70s, was crushed, and instead we get a generalized discussion of homelessness. Because there are no specific action agendas, action items on the agenda at this study session. It can't do anything in terms of get anything voted in or put forward. So instead of a real debate on a real issue that should be moved forward, we're going to get a bunch of shelter providers like Karen Gillette and city bureaucrats and some homeless advocates too, sort of arguing in generalities about what's going on with the homeless situation in Santa Cruz. Well, call me a growler, call me a cynic, call me somebody who's painting things black before he sees the whole picture, but I think we have to come to this City Council study session on March 4th with a clear sense of what we really need and want in Santa Cruz. And I don't think there's a lot of doubt about that in the minds of homeless people or homeless advocates. You know, there are some people who feel that there shouldn't be homeless ghettos, so even safe zones where people sleep, like in Miami, as decreed by the federal courts when they threw out the Miami practices of arresting the homeless for sleeping there in 1991-92, even those safe zones are forms of ghettoizing and are inappropriate, don't really guarantee the right civil rights of homeless people. And there are some debates about that, but I don't think there's much debate among true liberals that homeless people should not be arrested for sleeping if they have no legal place to sleep. That cannot be done. That cannot be a legal, humane, sensible, cost-effective, or constitutional process. And even though that's agreed, it goes on every night. It goes on. It has gone on every session of the City Council. And you're going to see trials, as I said before, coming up around that issue. So I put forward a speech to City Council, which I think I'm going to read here, and perhaps I can get some input from listeners in case you have anything you want to say about this issue or other homeless rights issues. You can give me a call at 408, in case you're out of the area, but locally it's 423-4833, or 423-HUFF. Again, HUFF stands for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Just give me a call, leave a message of any length. And if you have objections to what I'm saying, if you think that I'm giving an incomplete account, if I'm falsifying, as indeed Michael Rotkin has recently claimed in the papers, that I'm a liar and a scoundrel and so forth, and living in a fantasy world in a parallel universe, whatever you think, let me know from you. Or if you have some ideas that you think are not being presented that are pertinent to this topic, I'd much like to put them out over the air. Again, that's 423-HUFF. And this was the speech to Santa Cruz City Council, which I was unable to give in its entirety. I gave some highlights on February 12th, and you get to hear it from start to finish. And this is how it goes. The fire and heat have dissipated from the blazing City Council meeting of last December 10th. There, three council members got the boot for trying to discuss the first significant modification of the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban and its unhappy 18-year history. Their attempt to simply talk about alternative winter shelter emergency plans brought down the wrath of Mayor Matthews and former Mayor Rotkin, unwilling to let half the progressives on the council have their say on this issue. On January 14th, dozens of individuals and organizations supported modification of the sleeping ban and the initiative of these three council members to take the dirty little sleeping ban secret out of the bushes and back alleys, out of the squad cars and holding cells, out of the courtrooms, back where the issue really belongs, in the forum of public discussion. But inside the chamber, there was no action taken to raise the winter shelter emergency again, merely arcane legalistic skirmishing. Celia Scott's motion to assure there would be no repeat of Rotkin's revenge was crushed. Instead, City Council gave its sleepy nod to the Social Services Subcommittee to set up a City Council study session. The scheduled 5 hours sounds extensive and includes at least four outspoken homeless activists. Still, the session is top-heavy with social service providers, hostile to activism and beholden to city funding, and also contains city officials whose job has been to enforce existing anti-homeless laws. Will this panel be able to factually investigate these basic questions? One. Is it true, as we have been saying for years, that the overwhelming majority of homeless people have no legal place to sleep, particularly during the non-winter months? What are the real facts? Two, is it true that the Armory Winter Shelter, which probably won't be available next year anyway, is unavailable for many people without homes for many different reasons? Pets, couples, jobs, alcohol and drug problems, vet problems, sleeping indoors, etc. Three, does the 1986 through 1989 experience of Santa Barbara, without a sleeping ban in most parts of that city, but with a camping ban retained, show us that a seaside tourist city can survive and flourish without a law making it illegal for poor people to sleep at night? Four, does that Santa Barbara experience show us as well that the more lenient laws there did not draw homeless people, did not create a magnet effect, as Michael Rotkin, as mayor, has often said? Five, does the positive experience of the Eugene Springfield Centennial Car Camp in Oregon in 1993 through 95 and our own positive experience with the Coral Street Open Air Shelter provide a basis for establishing an improved low-income campground here in Santa Cruz? Six, is the Santa Cruz County solution, restricted no-camping zones, a possible solution for the city as well? Those who are planning and running this session must have their eyes on an action agenda if this session is to be other than a polite pacifier for council members whose political speech has been brutally suppressed. I asked Councilmember Kennedy to organize the agenda to address the Safe Haven campground proposal he proposed last fall, and the winter shelter emergency plan he was not allowed to propose this last winter. The good faith of this council would be further improved if it declared an amnesty on past sleep crime prosecutions and a moratorium on sleeping tickets where there was no legal place to sleep while this issue is being discussed. Address these four basic facts: no campground, no armory, no legal place to sleep, and a law that makes it criminal to sleep or cover up with blankets at night. Address these facts to take the first hard step towards a solution that will unite this community and let us begin to do the real work together. This is a speech I entitled March 4th Meeting Must Focus on Censored Issues, the Right to Sleep and Access to Public Spaces for the Poor. It's actually just about the right to sleep. And that was on February 12th before City Council that I gave some of that speech. And now a little more of the mime troupe.
Muchachos, el baile de la caña.
Manolito, baila.
issue that has been of pressing interest to me, and I think to a number of other people, has been the failure of the city and the city's primary shelter provider, for emergency shelter anyway, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, as it calls itself, its failure to reopen the Coral Street Open Air Shelter or some other campground, preferably in a better place, where low-income people could sleep, particularly crucial as the welfare cuts, the SSI cuts, and the GA restrictions begin to take hold. Food stamps, of course, are going to begin to be cut off in significant numbers in this county, particularly, I believe, beginning in April. And apropos of this is a project called Safe Haven, which Kennedy, Councilmember Kennedy, and several other council members apparently were eager to get going after the September 10th demonstrations at City Council, the lockdown demonstrations, and those demonstrations will be coming up for trial in March, more about that later. But demonstrations produced results. City Council members began calling up Citizens Committee for the Homeless, specifically Frank Pusilek, who was working for the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and asking him to put together a campground plan or a pavilion plan at Holy Cross. Anyway, it's something that would essentially open up an emergency campground and to figure out the budget for it. And they said that they had the money for it, and they put aside money for it, and they just wanted to know how much it was going to cost. Well, Pusilek came up with some estimates, but his boss, Paul Lee, on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, apparently wanted to inflate that budget a bit to make sure that CCH didn't get caught with its pants down, as it did several years ago when it couldn't even provide decent porta-potties, decent security, or rolls of toilet paper to the people who were crowding onto its Coral Street open-air shelter in 1995 in the winter and the late fall. So they came back with a proposal for Safe Haven for the city council members that was very costly, and the city council members who came to a meeting of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless in the fall said that costs too much, and besides, the protest at City Hall has ended. They didn't say that, but we think that was their motivation, so why bother? We don't need this now. The pressure is off. And so the proposal kind of went into limbo, particularly since Karen Gillette, who is the executive director of the Homeless Community Resource Center, said that she couldn't be a part of this plan because it would involve restrictive and intrusive searches of people's tents and so forth for drugs and alcohol if the facility were truly to be drug and alcohol free, an unrealistic kind of expectation. And in a way, you know, one can applaud her for this. Certainly one doesn't want homeless people to be subjected to these kinds of searches. In another way, it was quite a clever thing for her to say, because it meant, since the city council would never approve a use drugs and alcohol if you want plan, that there would never be any campground, and certainly not one situated, for example, right next to her homeless community resource center as there was before. Anyway, the Safe Haven project kind of disappeared for a while, but the man who had drawn it up and worked on the budget for it, Frank Pusilek, a man who did not forget this proposal. And indeed, he's now working with a group run by activist Charlie Phillips called the Eco Village Group, which is concerned with opening up a kind of an ecologically sound village as a kind of model project where not just homeless people, but artisans and folks interested in alternate lifestyles can come to live and so forth. And right now, this is in its very visionary stages, and it's not anything like an emergency campground proposal that we desperately need immediately, but certainly is a good idea, and Pusilek is working on that. But Pusilek has recently come up with this plan for a safe haven, and the Citizens Committee for the Homeless itself, under the pressure from a council member, I should say CCH member, Becky Johnson, has actually gotten the subcommittee to start investigating whether a safe haven proposal should be made to City Council, specifically the safe haven proposal that the City Council member Scott Kennedy asked Pusilek to draw up in the fall, though somewhat scaled down, I think to 80 people, and located at Coral Street, since Holy Cross Church is not usable because of its use during the day, and also because the parishioners apparently are adamantly opposed to that, or somewhat opposed to that use by homeless people. So I've been circulating petitions with other homeless people at the Homeless Community Resource Center and down on the Pacific Garden Mall, asking if homeless people feel this is an important thing to have a campground, feel it should be opened right away. And the Citizens Committee for the Homeless is having its board meeting next week. That's next Thursday. That's Thursday, February 27th at 4 o'clock at Garfield Park Church up at Arrowhead Circle, where Wilson and California streets intersect. That's open to the public. I actually attended the last meeting of the CCH Board of Directors, amazingly enough, after having been barred from there for a year. And I'm encouraging every homeless person who's interested in a campground to stuff his or her body into that room and support that proposal, and also to call CCH at 427-2367 and to tell CCH yes on the campground, and also to call City Council at 429-3550 and say yes on a campground. Yes. Now, there's a subcommittee that's covering this, and the subcommittee includes the newest CCH board member, our dear old friend, City Council member, Catherine Byers. Catherine Byers has quite a reputation as a liberal in this community. I call her Birdseed Byers because, in spite of her reputation, she refuses to take a strong, vigorous public stand in favor of supporting the rights of homeless people, generally speaking, particularly around the issue of the sleeping ban, but also around the issue of the downtown ordinances. Well, she has done many good things. I don't want to belittle her minority votes, her votes in favor of the homeless garden, which Mike Rodkin again attempted to muzzle at the last council meeting, her votes in favor of a winter shelter emergency, and her outrage, for example, at surveillance cameras being proposed to be set up by the Downtown Association downtown. Another sad commentary on what's going on downtown. Anyway, Byers, unfortunately, does not support a safe haven at the moment, and she doesn't support it for all the wrong reasons, not because there's something intrinsically wrong with it, not because it couldn't be managed well, not because it couldn't be run on a cost-efficient basis, not because it couldn't be located at Coral Street where it was before with a scaled-down number of people, a better management, maybe there'll be some internal homeless self-government going on there, but because she doesn't think it's politically possible. Sort of like somebody saying to Gandhi, well, you know, we like the idea, but it's, you know, equality between outcasts and other folks, equality, they might have said to Martin Luther King, with blacks, it's not politically feasible at this time. So, you know, go back and wait for another 100 years. Sorry about that. This is a cowardly reply, and I have to criticize Byers for it, though frankly, she and Celia Scott are the best of what is a very bad bunch on this particular issue, in spite of all their protestations of all the wonderful services they provide for homeless people in Santa Cruz. So, there are meetings coming up that I'm encouraging people to go to. On Monday, February 24th at 1 o'clock at 1019 North Branch 40 Avenue, there will be a meeting of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's Safe Haven Subcommittee, the final meeting of that committee. You're invited to come, and that will be again 1019 North Branch 40, 1 o'clock, Monday, February 24th. On Tuesday the 25th, you're going to have your usual City Council meeting at 3:30 and at 7, two sessions, afternoon and evening. Both of them will be important. One of them will concern the Homeless Garden Project. Homeless Garden Project has been criticized by people in the past as being a sort of cutesy welfare project for a few chosen homeless people that doesn't really supply food to homeless people generally or allow them to establish any kind of self-sufficiency. But I think established a kind of community that's good and that's important. And I support its continuance, and I think that it's good that Celia Scott was able to get the attempt to sell the Pelton Avenue property put off until this council meeting, and I believe that's happening at 3:30, although it could be at the 7 o'clock session. You should check with the city clerk's office to get the actual agenda. But again, 3:30 and 7 on February 25th, Tuesday, our city council meetings. You can speak at city council meeting at 7 o'clock on the issue of Safe Haven,
police harassment, other homeless rights issues that are important to you. Then on Thursday, as I mentioned before, on February 27th at 4 o'clock, CCH's Board of Directors meets at Garfield Park Church, 111 Arrett Circle. That's the circle out where California and Woodrow intersect, as I said before. Come to that meeting and support the Safe Haven Project. And you can also, of course, call in to support Safe Haven. You can call the Santa Cruz City Council again, 429-3550. Get your pencils now, 429-3550. That's Santa Cruz City Council. You can call the Citizens Committee for the Homeless at not 427, but 423-2367, 423-2367. And you can also contact Homeless Community Resource Director Karen Gillette, who is probably going to have a lot of say in what goes on around this, because the city is turning increasingly to her, I think, on both on this project and the infamous Community House project.
And her phone number is 458-6020. If you've seen the flyer Still Tired, it has the wrong number. It's not 458-6022, which is another number at the Homeless Community Resource Center, but is indeed 458-6020. And she does indeed need to be told that it's important for her to support a campground for the basic needs of poor people that she gets paid to help. It's been unfortunate that Karen Gillette recently has kind of taken a rather strange stand in not letting her board of directors meetings be open to homeless people and homeless advocates. I've been informed that numerous requests to her to give the time and place of her next board meeting have been either refused or the calls have been unanswered from other sister groups such as CCH, such as Fair Share, such as Housing Now Santa Cruz. People have called her up asking her where and when her next board meeting is, and she's refused to tell them. I, in fact, wrote her a long letter which asked her to specifically get off her high horse and post those times and places without any further ado, discussion, debate, or obfuscation, because people who are at her Homeless Community Resource Center, homeless people have a right to know when those meetings are and to attend them, even if Karen Gillette doesn't like the idea or wants to funnel all homeless action through her. That's not something that really she has a right to do, nor should she expect that it's something homeless people will tolerate. In any case, she's decided to make this kind of a personal turf war, it seems. She's apparently said she doesn't have to open up her board meetings. Her board meetings aren't subject to the Brown Act. And we can talk to her lawyers if we want some other response. So I'm just suggesting people give her a call at 458-6020 and tell her, A, that you support the campground, and B, you'd like to know the time and place of her next board meeting so you can attend that if you wish. She may not give it to you, but she should certainly know that the community is interested in knowing that. Well, you get to hear me for hours and hours on this show, which is both a delight and perhaps for some not so delightful. Let's hear somebody else. Recently, there's been a crackdown on the Santa Cruz Mall. What else is new? You may remember that there was some sort of deal reached with the drummers that would supposedly allow drummers to continue their drumming without some sort of blanket prohibition, no pun intended, on the mall. At the same time, meet the concerns of older residents who want to be able to sleep and don't want to be awakened from their sleep by loud drumming at odd hours of the night. Well, there's been abusive behavior by the police around people on the mall who are poor and who are drumming, in spite of the agreement that had been reached. And here's the account of one man who I met in court. We're speaking to...
Yeah, Jeffrey Stewart.
Jeffrey, you're here in court on February 6th. It's about 10 to 10. And what brings you to this neck of the woods?
Well, I have to come down here and stand up for my civil rights, which have been infringed upon while playing music on the streets of Santa Cruz. I'd rather not be here, but the way things have been going around here, it seems like it's my civic duty to sort of follow through on what happened to me.
Now, you're a drummer?
Yeah.
And what when were you stopped on the street?
Well, just about 2 weeks before Christmas, a friend of mine happened to be playing one of my drums after 10 o'clock, and The police showed up and proceeded to write him out a ticket, and then they wanted to write me a ticket too, and I wasn't even playing, and he wrote my name down, and then before even taking any more information, he started hassling this little short Mexican guy, and he couldn't speak English, and so this other Mexican fellow wanted to jump up and interpret for him, and a policeman told him to get back against the car, and the guy just backed up and didn't get up against the car, and so he slammed him up against the car and started to put handcuffs on him without even asking him what his name was or anything. And at that point, I said, this guy's out of control here. You know, I just picked up my stuff and started to walk away. Plus, I really had to go to the bathroom really bad.
And who was the officer doing all this?
Officer Eveleth.
Ah, yes, Officer Eveleth.
Yeah, and he's got a reputation for being a little bit heavy-handed with people. Well, as it was, I went and complied with the request to stop playing and continued around to the back of Rosie McCann's and then went over to the Silver Bullet to use the restroom. When I came out, he came running around the corner and told me to get down on my knees, and as I was going down on my knees, he slammed me down on the ground, pushed my arm behind my back, and caused my big bruise on my face and everything like that. And now I'm charged with resisting arrest and possession of a milk crate and...
possession of a milk crate.
Well, those milk crates have been out there forever. People sit on them. Street musicians sit on them. I don't know what they...
You look like a milk crate thief to me, man. I'm just like...
In any event, that's what I'm here for today.
Have you filed a complaint against Eveleth yet?
No, I'm not interested in getting into contradiction with people about things. We were out there playing sort of Christmas type of music and stuff like that, and this guy apparently got a complaint. I don't know who complained. I mean, we get these complaints all the time, and we come to court, and nobody ever shows. So I never know whether the police really have a complaint or not.
No, what I mean to say is, have you complained against the police officer for his abusive conduct toward you?
Well, I went to the mayor's office, and she wasn't there, and I didn't like the attitude of the people who were in the office. And so I said, my intuition told me that it was really not going to do me any good, and it was very cold and rainy that day, and I had just been beaten up by the police, and so...
The same day?
The next morning, yeah.
Did you seek medical attention? Did you get any photographs of your face?
Yeah, I got a photograph, yeah, video, yeah.
Do you have any witnesses that indicated that they saw you shortly thereafter, that you were injured?
Yeah. No, they didn't, nobody saw the actual event. But,
do you have a number where you can be reached?
No, I don't. I'm homeless.
An address where you can be reached? You can be found often across the
border. Because I made an agreement. If they see, another thing is that they confiscated my drums and then used them as a and to extort agreement from me that if I stopped going down there and playing drums until my court case was settled, they'd give me my drums back. I said, well, that's extortion. And then the judge said, well, I'm going to order you not to go on the Pacific Garden Mall anyway until your court case is settled. And then the city attorney gave me my drums back.
Have you, what judge was this?
Judge Barton, who seems to be a very...
Barracuda Barton, as I call it.
Oh, I would disagree with that. However, I'm not in direct contact with him all the time, but, you know, he has to deal with a lot of different things, and, you know, he seems to have a degree of equanimity acceptable to me. Acceptable to me, yes. Oh,
acceptable to you.
Acceptable to me. He must be under a lot of pressure at this particular time.
But he did grant this order, barring you from going down on the Pacific Garden Mall?
Well, now that I think about it, he just facilitated the process, because I felt it was extortion for them to take my drums and then use them as a leverage to have me, to deprive me of my civil rights. But since I'm under OR to his authority, he just accelerated the process, because I wasn't going to go for extortion. So he just said, okay, Jeffrey, well, you know, I'm telling you can't go down there, and then they gave me my drums back. So rather than me agreeing to something which I felt was extortion, he just accelerated the process.
By removing your civil right to go down on the mall.
Well, I'm under OR.
He has no call to remove. You've been convicted of no crime.
If I was out on bail, I would, of course, then I'm out on my own. But I'm out on my own recognizance.
Yeah, but you're out on your own recognizance because you're not a flight risk. That's the reason. You're not out on your own recognizance because... you know, you're somehow guilty and they're doing you a favor or something. You're on your own recognizance because, first of all, it's cheaper for them. They don't want to keep you in jail. And also, they know you're going to show up in court. You're here.
Right.
You know, I mean, so that's...
I must get to my...
I'll let you get on with it.
Thank you very much.
Let me know what happens.
Yes,
I will. Let me give you a phone number. Okay, so again, we're talking to...
Jeffrey Stewart again. Yeah.
Jeffrey, it's about 11:40 and you've just come out of a court. What's happened?
Well, due to the fact that I don't have the time or the enthusiasm for going through this petty type of confrontation with the
officers who harassed you.
All the, just the whole particular thing. I've agreed to stop playing drums on Pacific Avenue for the next 6 months.
You plead guilty to anything?
Possession of a milk crate.
Possession of a milk crate.
Well,
we're going to call you Milky henceforth, big guy.
Well, I mean, was it?
Really?
Yes.
Who charged you with that? Well, your
SPCA.
Name again?
SPCA.
Your name is?
Alice Tyhurst. They charged me, and when the judge read that, he looked up and turned around in the court and as though someone should answer to him, what are the milk crates doing on my charge?
Right.
I had to move from my place in Salinas when I had a fractured sternum, and I was moving my animals to a five-acre place in Ben Lomond.
Interestingly enough, the voice you now hear of the woman speaking about the milk crate charge, she was charged with cruelty to her animals, and she was almost in hysterical tears because of her cats being taken away from her. That was an interesting case as well, the disposition of which I'm not too sure of, but this business of overcharging people, and then, for instance, this possession of a milk crate, it was a felony charge used against Food Not Bombs activist Keith McHenry in San Francisco in 1994, when McHenry was jailed for, I think it was at least a month, and held on, was it $75,000, $100,000 bail, something like that. And one of the charges was possession, felony possession of a milk crate. It's like they were trying to find any possible pretext to harass him. And similarly, Jeffrey here seems to have been facing the same kind of harassment from Officer Eveleth. So I encourage our listeners, if they have been harassed, particularly by Officers Eveleth and Over, though I don't want to single these two out. Well, I do want to single these two out. Let me take that back. But if you've been harassed by anybody, do give a call to SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, at 475-2012. That's SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, 475-2012. You can also file a written complaint with the Citizens Police Review Board at 905 Cedar Street, and they're open Monday through Thursday from 9 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon. Don't expect they will do anything. They don't do anything. They've done essentially nothing, but they do keep records, and I think it's a good practice for people to get this stuff down on paper and document it, where eventually it can come to light in some better future universe.
No lloren por mi pueblo americano. Lágrimas no las necesitamos.
Ponte en pie y ofrece tu mano. Hermandad solo viene ayudando.
Don't waste your time in mourning or in sorrow. Don't use your tears to prove your love of man.
If you care, you have to take a stand. Fight to build a better world tomorrow. No lloren por mi pueblo americano. Lágrimas no las necesitamos. Ponte en pie y ofrece. Celebrate a new world king born.
with the tears of joy and laughter. Celebrate a new world being born.
And by the way, if you speak Spanish fluently and are good at translations, love to have your help in translating HUF flyers, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom flyers, which we would like to see get out to people who read Spanish as well as English. Give a call to 423-HUF if you'd like to help, 423-4833. For the last 4 months, I've been promising Free Radio's Skidmark Bob Duran and Phil Free, who have been tirelessly running the Free Radio in the absence of a home, and if you, by the way, have a home for Free Radio Santa Cruz, do give a call. Let me know at 423-HUF, and I'll pass on the word to Free Radio. And you are listening, by the way, to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz. This is a pre-recorded tape. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. If you want to get in touch with me or respond to anything you've heard on this tape, positively or negatively, give a call to 423-4833. Anyway, I've been promising Bob and Phil this tape for, 4 months, and been rather depressed about getting a tape out on the air, because since there's no regular time for this show anymore, nobody who wants to hear it knows when it comes on and won't be able to tune into it and so forth. But I think that the issues are important ones, and here is Bob Duran, Skidmark Bob, who recently went to a court trial on a number of charges, most of them revolving around his playing music on Pacific Avenue. And many of the charges, three at least, stemming from complaints from Alibaba of Alibaba's cafe. Bob had a long court trial in Commissioner Salazar's courtroom last Friday. Actually, it was a week ago, Friday now, last week, 7 days ago as we speak on the 14th of February. And here's his report on how things went. Apologize for the quality of the recording, which is not the best. February 21st, 1997. And we're here with Bob Duran and his infamous son.
Cohort. Yes.
And it's about, well, it's nearing noon, and Bob, this is a Friday 2 weeks after you went to trial, or is it a week after, something like that?
It's approximately...
Yes, a week after I went to trial. You were being, of course, tried up for essentially playing music on the mall under a variety of different infraction laws.
This is true.
This is true. In front of the ever-just Commissioner Salazar.
Well, maybe that's why they call him Commissioner. I don't know.
Maybe he's not that good.
But anyway, I
what happened?
Got my verdict today of guilty on all counts of, well, just the two counts of unreasonable noise. The third one, I was found not guilty because it was a curfew ordinance that Officer Bayani cited me for, and it was like at 7 o'clock, the curfew's at 11. I was found not guilty of lying on the sidewalk.
Yeah. Good for you.
I was found not guilty of obstructing the sidewalk with my bicycle when the net team, Officer Berticelli, cited me for, because he just didn't like me. She's a cute community service officer.
Yeah, she is.
I think it might be Shockey. I'm not sure.
And Shockey as well.
So, anyway, yes, I was found, I'm not sure it was guilty for the display ordinance. I think it was guilty, and he suspended the sentence because I have since changed my sign, or I don't even have a sign anymore. I just put my tapes out. You know, if people are going to ask me, I said, yeah, give me a couple dollars for them, you know? I mean, a police officer has to verbally hear you say that, you know, which is absurd, display ordinances. The bike light ticket, I was found guilty. Butchie Baker, he worked hard for that one, and he won. I have to admit, my light was not bright enough from 300 feet, although he did not walk 300 feet and look at the bike, which I asked him to do. And he doesn't have a tape measure with him in the car, so.
But he has an eagle eye, could they say.
Supposedly he does. He was supposed to show up for a camping ticket in court the other day, but he didn't show up for one of the people.
Anyway,
I was found basically guilty and not guilty. So,
what is your total sentence?
It's $135 for the two unreasonable noise and the camping. I was found guilty of camping at City Hall. big surprise, you know. I didn't even get to sleep. I just, like, laid down and put the blanket on me, and Headley comes riding by, shines a light on me, and then arrests me and Sean Halimi.
Now, the two tickets under which you were found guilty had to do with incidents involving, I don't know what his legal name is, but I know him as Ali Baba, of Ali Baba's kiosk.
Yes.
Near the Del Mar.
Kervarshi? Yeah, I forget his last name. Yes.
And he, in essence, felt that his own recorded elevator music, well, perhaps a little strong, his own choice of pop music was more suitable for the mall and for his business vicinity than your songs. What songs were you playing in his vicinity?
All the Just Kidding favorites that you'd hear on the mall every, you know.
Such as?
You feel free to play. Kill a Cop Inside, Drug War Casualty, America with 3 Ks.
America.
Some of Phil Free's hits, including Mayor's Lawn, Sleeping on a Mayor's Lawn, and the new hit called Downtown, which talks about the DTA. And
really?
And
I'd like to hear that new
a member of the DTA. And
have that on tape? Could I give you a donation?
Our next album should be coming out. We're expecting this one to go platinum any day now. Of course, I was found guilty on displaying my merchandise, so I can't sell them like Blackbuster does here across the street. Of course, they would have to put a parental advisory sticker because we say fuck a couple times.
Hey, like Pat Ring.
Like Pat Ring, could be. Oh, there's Officer Bayani. He lost. He's one of the losers.
There are winners and there are losers.
Is this going to impact the kind of music you play around Ali Baba's kiosk?
Probably, yeah. Now that I know where his problem is, when the musician's guidelines would have taken care of everything, if they would have said to Bob, you can play for another half an hour here because you've been here for half an hour and an hour, and then you move on. And I find no problem with that. But no, they send the police out to ticket me.
Has Ali agreed to abide by the guidelines?
No, he hasn't agreed. He knows about them. All the police officers know about them, and it would make things much easier. Like, if these guys had a problem with Blockbuster, they could say, hey, you know, here's the guidelines that everybody agreed on, the musicians agreed on. Do you agree to leave in an hour? And they could say yes or no.
Have you ever seen the hosts actually using these guidelines?
Huh?
Have you ever seen the hosts using these guidelines?
They started to use them on us, which, you know, we said, okay, well, it's, you know, we agreed, and we started doing that. But then after that, I believe there was something they told the hosts that just to call the police when it concerns me or Phil or, you know, other political musicians on the mall, which sure isn't that many. It's mostly people.
You have a little bit of egg.
Egg? I don't eat eggs.
Maybe it's spermatozoa from a gay encounter.
It could be. You never know.
Now, what about your other case where you were suing the landlords of the Campbell Street house from which you and Free Radio Santa Cruz were evicted last August? That is, that was a lawsuit, as I remember, for relocation funding that was not given to you.
No word yet. Judge Stevens still thinking about it. I'm sure it's a hard decision to come around and see. I also got a criminal thing. They want me to pay for the police department door.
Oh, that's right. You had a vandalism hearing today.
No.
Restitution next week. Next week, a restitution hearing.
And I have to ask Becky Johnson if she'll take the stand because she took the video of the incident where the door is plainly and clearly broken already before they put us in.
You even hear the sergeant or lieutenant
who put you in commenting on how bad the door is?
We might have to call Habey. I'm sure the DA will have to call Habey there because we showed it to David Rabo, and David Rabo said he's not convinced, and it's obvious that the door is broken. There's gum, tape gum on the door from duct tape when the door was broken. And, you know, I did kick the door, but I did not expect it to bust the door like it did. And, you know, I don't have any superhuman strength other than my body odor.
Other than your spiritual power, Bob.
My unreasonable noise, maybe.
You had unreasonable noise. So we're going to call you Unreasonable Noise Duran henceforth.
I have one more case coming.
Ah, yes. What's that all about?
Me and Evelyn over here, the woman from Joy from the Vault is going to have to show up. And she's, from what I hear from Tom Noddy, she's been involved in trying to shut musicians down downtown. And you know, she's been real kind of, shall we say, fascistic in her business decorum. Does that sound good?
Yeah, it sounds good.
Absolutely.
Fascistic.
A trite phrase from the 30s.
Between us journalists here.
So this case comes up when, and what's the charge?
Actually, I haven't even filed it. I haven't even disqualified because Officer Evelyn fucked up and signed had the person sign in the red box so that they were charged with the unreasonable disturbing noise, and I was a complainant, although I didn't complain, and then I refused to sign at that point. And then he said, well, we'll take you to jail. And I said, oh, okay, and I put an X there. I didn't even sign. I just put an X. And then he was upset at that time. Over was half, very happy that he was busting me, just laughing, having a good old time. And, you know, I don't know. This is free speech that I'm doing out here, and they're just, like, constantly arresting me and stopping people. Like, this guy here got a trespassing ticket in front of Dale Williams at night, and it's like, you know, I mean, the cops have that discretion to decide if this person over here is trespassing in the alcove of Blockbuster. And they say, oh, it's up throughout the mall, but I think it's certain merchants that say, because they don't have trespassing signs in their windows in Blockbuster, but they do over here in the near business center and over here at Dale Williams.
The Downtown Association, I understand, on the person of Linda Steinau, has been going from store to store, encouraging stores to either put such signs in their window or, let's say, be more verbal about their, quote, problems with undesirables. A phrase recently used by Cynthia Matthews yesterday in a newspaper article about the new Klieg lights that have been put in at Cathcart Pacific.
Yeah. Beautiful lights, lighting up everything. And no wonder, it keeps all the El Centro people awake now. There's going to be huge lights just beaming all night long.
They're trying to throw light where there was only darkness before.
I don't know. It's city's stupid for even thinking that a retirement home should be right there at Cathcart Pacific, you know, unless they wanted this kind of friction to happen so they could come down more on us. But that would be a conspiracy.
Do we know when the retirement home was put in? Was there already a scene at Cathcart Pacific, or was the scene after the retirement home?
The scene started after the earthquake when, see, up and down the mall used to be all like that. It used to be like Cathcart Pacific, you know, a bunch of free-thinking people walking around and parking their van and maybe a couple dogs. But I know they had leash laws a long time, but it was, you know, even down by Scribner Park, people used to hang out there. People don't hang out there anymore. You know, that's another reason why Food Not Bombs moved down there.
What do you think of the recent move from Food Not Bombs from Cathcart Pacific down to the town clock?
I think that it was a good move. It's not good enough for the DTA, according to, what's his name, the president? I forget his name. Anyway, John something.
Right. Well, Feed the People is still, in fact, feeding at Cathcart Pacific.
Yes, they are. Well, we moved for reasons like it was getting a little hostile for us. Hey, what's up? It was a little hostile down there, and not to mention, you know, like the article in the Sentinel was nice, but they didn't mention anything about the beautification project taking off part of the sidewalk and the wall so people couldn't walk into the parking lot and walk back out. Maybe it's a little crowded there.
Posies, not people project?
Yes, and then they come out another foot and a half to squeeze in, and then Food Not Bombs had problems. We started having friction with the police, them saying, we have to be behind the bricks, behind the bricks, we've got to be behind the bricks, and, you know, worked that out with Headley a couple of times, and then people start getting stay-away orders. People that sell pot down there, they go to the DA, or loitering tickets, or anybody drunk in public tickets. The DA, Jeffrey, the drummer, he got a stay-away order from all Pacific Avenue.
Under pressure, actually got a stay-away not to play drums on Pacific Avenue, I understand. We're still waiting for that decision. Oh, in the civil case of Campbell Street? Remember that there was the tenants?
Small claims.
That got fouled up in the mail. I did that a couple of weeks ago.
Oh.
Yeah, I checked with the clerk's office.
Oh, okay.
Right, say 2 weeks ago, whenever it was done the next day.
Thank you. Okay.
Well, then I'll have to check it out.
Very interesting.
Judge Stevens there. You got that on tape.
Oh, that's interesting.
He was our star witness.
Judge Stevens.
I know him.
We're old friends.
He was actually our star witness in the Pat Ring Fuck You case.
That's true, he was.
In fact, David Bovee, Berkeley attorney, wishes to have that Judge Stevens testimony that it was the judge's choice, not the bailiff's choice, when to declare a contempt of court action.
Yeah.
Available, because he's going to do, I guess he's going to show that in the injunction. He's going to have a further hearing on the injunction in a couple months when it comes up.
And that's an interview with Skidmark Bob on the streets of Santa Cruz. Just today, February 21st.
It was fortuitous that Judge Stevens happened on by, and apropos of that, let's turn to the first victory of the City Hall Sleepers protest in the first misdemeanor trial. Actually, four misdemeanors were levied against activist Pepper Tongue Patrick Ring. And rather than describe it in my own lugubrious, wandering way, I will read the press release that was issued when that trial was won. The press release is dated February 7th. For immediate release from the City Hall Sleepers protest, defense victorious in Fuck You trial. The first jury trial, the City Hall Sleepers protest, ended Thursday, February 6th in Department 2 with Patrick Ring, an outspoken environmental and homeless activist, not guilty on three of the four charges and a 10-2 hung jury for acquittal on the initial Fuck You charge. Ring's charges included two contempts of court, one battery on bailiff Jim Thurber, and one resisting arrest. Ring claimed bailiff Jim Thurber stalked and assaulted him at a June 19, 1996 hearing to halt police abuses at City Hall against homeless protesters, such as stealing blankets, falsely arresting sleepers, and destroying political signs at the City Hall sleepers protest. Instead of Thurber's being charged and discharged from his job, the DA instead spent $10,000 to try Pat Ring, probably to avoid civil liability, which the county now faces, now that Ring has been acquitted of all charges. Ring was successively hassled, ejected, trailed, assaulted, handcuffed, pepper-sprayed, arrested, and jailed at Thurber's initiative while near Judge Samuel Stevens, Courtroom 8. Ring plans to sue Thurber and the county. The three-day trial became known as the Fuck You trial because of the extraordinary number of times those words were repeated. They were repeated dozens of times by witnesses and attorneys in describing Ring's initial pungent verbal response to Bailiff Thurber's harassment, the utterance from which the original contempt charge sprang. Key to the case was the fact that Ring was not found in contempt by Judge Stevens, the judge you heard whom we spoke to briefly on the sidewalk, Bob Duran and myself, upsetting Thurber, who raced out of the courtroom after Ring to punish him for the offending Fuck You, establishing an escalating daisy chain of charges against Ring. Public defender Anthony Bowl, in his first jury trial, thoughtfully defended Ring, arguing with apparent success that Thurber, Bailiff Thurber, was a man of action who used excessive force and went beyond the scope of his duties to persecute Ring. Witnesses testified to Thurber's history of excessive force under color of law while in deputy dress in cases involving Chris Brosda, Patrick Lancelin, and Victor Harris. Attorney Kate Wells was prepared to testify she saw Thurber manhandle at least three other individuals. Robert Norris, Sean Alimi, and George Jagarian were ready to testify as to specific and personal instances of Thurber's misconduct. Sandria Roth and Robert Flory testified that a Thurber-led gang of 4 to 6 deputies slammed Patrick Ring to the ground and pepper-sprayed him after he was already in handcuffs. Ring will also face a misdemeanor contempt of the injunction against the City Hall sleepers' vigil for putting up a small legalized sleep sign on a City Hall lamppost last May, which was torn down by Councilmember Kennedy, and Ring will also face a disturbing the peace charge after angry words, namely, fuck you, to Mayor Michael Rotkin at City Hall after Ring intervened when a trollbuster, an anti-homeless individual, was maligning one of the demonstrators, and Mayor Rotkin essentially supported the trollbuster in Patrick Ring's view. Upcoming sleep crime trials. The lead trial of protest founder Dan Hopkins started February 14th, and upon its outcome, dozens of other cases depend, and that trial will be resumed on March 7th in Department 1, Judge Kelly's court. On March 24th and March 30th, there's a whole bunch of trials coming. And if you're interested in the press releases that cover this, give a call to 423-4833, and we'll see if we can get them to you or tell you where you can pick them up. Well, we're almost near the end of Bathroom Spiro's Broadsides. Hope you've enjoyed the show. We're going to play a little more music, maybe wind up with a final interview, and hope that you will yourself get in touch and let us know what's going on downtown, what's going on in terms of abuses against poor people, whether in the shelter system, such as it is, the minor shelter system that we have, with the welfare cuts, if you're being harassed or hassled by businesses. I myself, when I was downtown today, I just finished a cup of coffee at Georgiana's Cafe when I was confronted by Bookshop Santa Cruz owner Neil Coonerty, who informed me that if I ever went into Georgiana's Cafe again, he would have me arrested for trespass. He said that he was going to do this because 3 years ago, we announced a boycott against the Bookshop Santa Cruz because Bookshop Santa Cruz owner Neil Coonerty, then also on the city council, was the main man behind the anti-homeless downtown ordinances, the sit on the sidewalk, go to jail law, the ask for a dime peacefully after dark, go to jail law, the have a table after dark, face police harassment law. Again, all of these sort of from the brain of Neil Coonerty, but admittedly supported by then-Mayor Scott Kennedy and even our great liberal Catherine Birdseed Byers, who did distinguish herself by not supporting the sit-on-the-sidewalk-go-to-jail law, but she did support the rest of the package. Anyway, Coonerty has given me warning that if I go to the Georgiana's Cafe again, and I have been going there for years and never had any problem, and didn't have any problem today, except Coonerty decided that he was going to put that cafe within his own personal Lebensraum zone, I guess, his own personal property zone, and declare that I was not to be allowed there. We'll see what happens with that. I may shine this on. I may show up and take a bus. I may protest with a flyer out front, or I may ignore the issue because we've got more important things to worry about. Let's have a little music from the San Francisco Mime Troupe.
Una tierra milagrosa que parece un jardín, con sus pájaros y flores, mi país de San Martín. Amigos, we bid you welcome as we sing to you our song. Of a land that's bathed in rivers and it's warm beneath the sun. Mother Earth in all her richness feeds the fields of yellow grain. But her magic shows most clearly in the sweetness of the cane.
A volcanic fire grows as the pressure to control it mounts. It threatens to explode.
This mighty power of nature, when unleashed, is bound to win. So grab a seat and you can watch the fireworks begin.
Let's conclude with something from Palo Alto, California, where on March 10th, the Sit Lie law will return to their city council for a final vote. That's a law that makes it illegal to sit or lie on a 10-block area along their main street, their Pacific Avenue, which is called University Avenue. There were some really fine speeches against this proposed law. One of them was rebroadcast on Purusha's show. Purusha is a commentator and peace activist on KKUP, who has a Wednesday morning show from 9 to 10. He
rebroadcast this speech by Robert Morgan, and here it is in its entirety, a great speech. If you're interested in the Palo Alto issue, give a call to 423-4833, and I'll try to give you more information.
Robert A. Morgan, I live at 1150 Byron Street. Mr. Mayor and council members, I have become very concerned in recent years about a growing disrespect for law. This is a dangerous trend which, if it is not reversed, leads to chaos and anarchy. Why do people not respect the law? Is it possible that the reason is that the law does not always respect the people? I understand that the city's legal department has worked hard to write a sit-lie law that will stand up to a legal challenge. But the essence of a good law is not simply that it can withstand legal scrutiny. In the past, more than a few practices that were by no means good have been supported by the law. King George's laws of taxation were legal, but they weren't good. Slavery was legal, but it wasn't good. Withholding the vote from women was legal, but it wasn't good. Oppressive racial laws were legal, but they weren't good. How did we get rid of these bad laws? By civil disobedience. Were the people that disobeyed these laws bad people? The patriots, the abolitionists, the right to vote women, the civil rights workers? No, they were good people overcoming bad laws. But this process of civil disobedience, as necessary as it sometimes seems to be, weakens the concept of government by law. So to maintain respect for law, we should pass only such laws as have moral and ethical substance, laws that are consonant with our evolving concepts of social justice, concepts that include compassion for those who find themselves temporarily or permanently in disadvantaged positions. We don't need laws that would suit the England of Charles Dickens. We need laws for the United States in the 21st century. We don't need more laws for the convenience of the rich and powerful, but laws that will comfort, strengthen, and encourage those who need help. Practically all of our laws are good and deserve the support of citizens. But any bad laws will infect the system and create a general disrespect for law. We must be sure that our laws respect our people, and that our people will respect our laws. This council has been exemplary in providing opportunities for people to work their way out of hunger and homelessness. But for some, this transition does not come overnight. Let us not write off as hopeless those who are slow to respond to these opportunities. We should not yield to temporary pressures that would sweep problems out of sight, but rather we should work toward the solutions of the problems.
You've been listening to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I've been your host, Bathrobe Spear Robert Norse. This is an occasional show, and if you want to be on the show, leave a message at 423-4833. Thank you for joining me. Let me know what you want broadcast on the future show, and I will do so as best I can.
Hello, I dream of dancing in the city with a husband by my side. But that was all so long ago. Now my dreams have died. Oh, my dreams have died.